once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach on this January 20th, 2018. And if you'd like to give us a call in here, presuming it's January 20th where you are, and talk to us about something to do with the economy or investments or something of that ilk, you're certainly welcome to give us a call at 254-773-1400.
Let's talk about some Earl.
Let me talk about the last caller just a second.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about that subject. There's a lot of emails going around, and there's a lot of bad websites and bad news locations that are there and are spread around and are very popular because they take a perception or prejudice that we have, and I say we, not you, because I have them too. And when we see one of those, we have a powerful tendency to immediately accept it.
That's called confirmation bias. If somebody's telling you what you already believe, you're a lot less likely to check the facts.
The reality is often quite a lot different and very counterintuitive. And I've not only read studies, but validated a lot of the data in the studies about what happens with immigration in the United States. And the fact is that every single serious study has come to the same conclusion, and that is if we cut off immigration of relatively low-skilled workers out of Latin America, if we were just to cut that off, it would only be a decade or two until we saw significant declines in the economic activity of the United States. And by then, it might be kind of like the Chinese one-child policy.
Right.
It might be too late to do anything about it.
This is as clear as we can say it. This is absolutely clear. Growth in an economy is based on two simple factors, nothing else. Throw all the other complicated things out there. Demographics, that means how fast is our population growing, and productivity, how much more and better are we making than we used to? Are we getting better techniques of producing the same things and creating more of them? If those two things are in line, we're in good shape. We are not growing as a nation unless we throw in immigration. If we stop growing as a nation, what we're going to find ourselves in, as you just said, is China, who just passed in December. They passed us with the average age. We're at 37.4. They're at 37.5 years old.
And they're growing older faster.
They're growing older faster, which means that their social programs, which essentially don't exist for old age, are going to collapse very, very quickly.
There's another example, Japan, which really, really, really doesn't like people immigrating into Japan. So they really have closed the borders. And they're on an island, so that's a lot easier to do. And a lot of you remember back 20 and more years ago when Japan was taking over everything and was going to conquer the world.
It was more than 20 years ago. It was 40
and more years. 40 years ago, Japan was clearly going to take over the world. It bought the Pebble Beach Yacht Course. It bought Madison Square Garden.
Back to the Future, the movie, where Michael J. Fox in the future, he's having to learn Japanese. Remember that.
Okay, this is the point. Looking at them at that moment, if you just ran a straight projection economically, they were going to be bigger than the United States, and they were going to take over the world exactly the way the movie suggested they would. The problem is that for the last 20-plus years, their economy has effectively grown zero. Our economy has grown by a factor of about 10. It used to be the Nikkei stock average was 10 times the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is now higher than the Nikkei stock average. That can be attributed to a single thing in their economy, one single thing. The fact that they have a very low birth rate and don't allow people to move into the country. We have a birth rate that's right now, native birth rate in the United States, not quite equal to the death rate. And as a result, we continue to allow immigration as we have for the history of this country.
I think we should just have more babies. Get out there and have babies, people.
Yeah, but I don't think we can make people do that.
Well, we can try.
Have
babies.
I think that's what welfare was all about.
Maybe.
I don't think it works well.
We have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I think there's, can we, granted we need immigration.
Right.
What we don't need is illegal immigration.
Correct. And, you're right.
Well, we I don't know.
What we need is rational laws.
Yes, and also, we don't need to have legislators making them citizens right away. Giving them amnesty is okay, but making them citizens so they can vote.
Well, giving them a path to citizenship like Reagan did, I think, works.
What we see here is if somebody is here and they're willing to take the 7 to 10 years to earn their citizenship, they become the best kind of citizen. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. We shouldn't just suddenly, next day, hey, you've been here for a while, here, have a citizenship. But there is an exception to that, and one that is not being followed. It's one area of immigration law that at one point was very true. If you served in the military for your entire career, up to the 20-year period, you would get your citizenship. We don't do that anymore. We don't do that anymore.
I think the same thing is true for people who commit crimes. I think they ought to be able to – they used to let people – let's say you're a thief. You know, you get caught felony theft, you know, something like that. They would give them a choice. You could go to prison or you can join the military.
No, that's a bad deal.
Well, I mean, sometimes it was good.
No, it was a bad deal.
This is something I can tell you. The country of Georgia, not the state of Georgia, the country of Georgia, that's how they populate their military. It's almost 100% in the enlisted ranks criminals.
And
they act like criminals.
That concept of sending people to the military rather than sending them to jail may have worked reasonably well when we had a very low-skilled drafty force in the military.
We now have a very, very high-skilled
ex-military officer, I can tell you it's a disaster.
I didn't mean to change the subject there. Anyway, back to now, what do you think about this DACA thing? Because, you know, I know they say 800,000 people, but that's the people who've applied for DACA.
Correct.
There are a lot more dreamers than that.
Let me address the numbers here.
I'm going to hang up and listen.
Okay.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Back in 2006, the 11 million number was thrown around for illegal immigration, and it was pretty close to accurate. A lot of people spent a lot of time. It was bipartisan. They looked at it from every angle they could. The Census Bureau was involved. And they came at this and they said 11 million illegal immigrants. Then we had the Great Recession. And most of the illegal immigrants that were here on their own, meaning not bringing their family with them, left. The vast majority of the illegal immigrants during that time period were from south of the border, either Mexico or further south into South America. We now probably have about 6 million illegal immigrants. That is a rough estimate. It hasn't had anywhere near the effort put into counting them, but roughly half of what we had, and most of the ones that stayed have a family here. So either they have citizen children or they brought over young children, which are the dreamer population. And if you think about 800,000 dreamers and you count the number as well of kids that are American citizens whose parents are illegal, you get right around the 1.2 million person number. So 800,000 to 1.2 million is a pretty good number to look at to say these are people that were young or were born here to illegal immigrants. So how do we treat them? And this is not an easy hot button issue. This is one that it's going to require a lot of discussion and less partisan debate, because I don't know a single Republican who would want to face-to-face with a child who spent their entire life in the United States say, get out. They can say it kind of distantly. At the same time, I don't know a single Democrat that's going to say that we need to open up the borders completely and let everybody in, whoever wants to come in. So we've got some area that we can work together on here. We've got to find that area.
We got some area that we can work together. The problem is, and the Supreme Court, fortunately, has three cases they're going to look at on this subject. The problem is gerrymandering. And the issue is that, very frankly, congressional districts in the United States, both Democrat and Republican, are in many cases safe districts because they've been engineered to be safe districts by the legislature with political intent. And in doing so, what they've done is they basically say the election occurs in the primary, and the people who vote in the primary tend to be relatively extreme believers, ideological believers. And so they force their representatives into tight ideological positions, which may not be good for the country and may not be even what the elected representative would prefer to do given his or her own choice.
But have to negotiate with an extremist on the other side.
Yeah.
They're going to come to a compromise that's less
palatable than what we want,
or maybe no compromise at all. Maybe just government shutdown. When could that happen?
I don't know. But the point, the caller last hour said something about welfare and was linking welfare to immigration.
Let me give some real quick reference points, and then you continue there. For exactly that caller, there are a series of places to look, and I'm going to give you a list. If you've got a pencil and paper and you're not driving, or if you have a smartphone and you can type quickly, the National Conference of State Legislatures, the National Governors Association, the National Archives and Records Administration, the Census Bureau, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Kaiser Commission on Medicaid and the Uninsured, the Office of Family Assistance, Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Agriculture. All of those carry data that we can look at to say that that email about states with more people on welfare than workers, that it was completely bogus. That's not true.
And I've actually done some looking at the welfare issue, and the reduction in welfare arose while President Clinton was in office. And by the way, the Democrats were not running Congress at that point. The Republicans were. So they should get credit for it, too.
Credit or uncredit?
No, credit. They did a really good job of reducing the welfare rolls and getting most of the people who shouldn't be on the welfare rolls off the rolls.
Well, that's what I mean. Uncredit, because it's credit to give people – I see what I mean there with the credit.
The growth in welfare in the recent past, and it has been growing, is not coming from where you think. It's coming from people born in the United States.
Yeah.
Many of them in rural areas in the Midwest, and you're not going to like this.
With opioid addictions.
The majority of welfare growth, if you by any definition of welfare you put it, is mostly white Americans today. It isn't dark-skinned immigrants. Now, is that a bad thing or a good thing? I'm not saying it's bad or good.
Just looking at the numbers.
It's just reality. Immigrants who come in, by and large, do not get and stay on welfare. That's just every study that's looked at it has said that that's the way it works.
Even illegal immigrants, because it's a lot harder for them to get welfare than if they would have to completely falsify their identification completely from one end to the other.
Which is getting very hard to do.
Very hard to do. It's getting harder and harder to do. And we've got a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. It's Chris in Georgetown.
Hi, Chris.
How are you? Well, I was going to call you up about something else about the – since the economy always seems to – when it explodes, there always seems to be a bubble somewhere where something happens and, you know, like the 80s or something like that. And I was just wondering where you guys see where the economy does grow really, really rapidly, where there is a bubble or where, you know, something could happen like the housing market or something like that, if you see that – somewhere in the future.
Sure.
Then my other question, you were talking about, you know, immigration, and I certainly understand the immigration people coming here and everybody wants to come here because of opportunity. But I would say the people that have come here either have come here illegal and brought their children here illegally. If they've done that, then in order to work, you've either worked under a fake Social Security number. I'm not positive about these things, or you're working cash under the table somehow.
Yeah.
And I would say if this is the case, if they've done this, and if this is the way it works, if I, have a citizen here, born here, had a fake Social Security number and was getting paid under the table, not paying my taxes, I'd go to jail.
Well, so do they.
So do they, when they're caught for it.
But you know, let me say something. If you come here as an illegal alien and somebody is paying you under the table with cash,
there's more than just you that should go to jail.
Or if you Chris, listen. If you, as a citizen of the United States, if you take cash under the table and you don't pay taxes on it, it is a civil offense, and you can be fined for it, but you don't go to jail. If your employer pays you cash under, you're talking about laws not enforced. If your employer pays you cash under the table, which is, by the way, the vast majority of illegal aliens are paid cash under the table by employers, generally large employers.
Right.
And those people, that is a crime, but they don't. But the
very much like
we just don't enforce it.
It's very much like prostitution. It's very rare for the Johns to be arrested. It's very common for the prostitutes to be arrested. That is a problem because the law was broken by two parties there.
If we enforce the laws, talking about enforcement of laws, if we enforce the laws that says that Jeff McClure, for example, is responsible for who mows his lawn, if I'm going to pay them a check, and at the end of the year, if it turns out that I have paid them more than $600 during the year, I'm required to issue them a 1099, but I don't.
Right.
Now, if we said, you've got to verify that all those people out there behind lawnmowers are legally here working.
It'd be very, very difficult.
Then the number of illegal aliens in the United States would drop dramatically, and the cost of getting one's lawn mowed would double or triple.
Well, I get it, but it's the price we pay to have laws enforced.
I completely agree.
That, so.
I agree. And where we are on this, Chris, I think we're all in agreement on this. Immigration is needed. Illegal immigration is not. We need to fix the laws. And this is kind of wrap up from what I was saying about talking about Reagan going all the way forward. It wasn't that long ago, about 10 years ago. Which I guess to some people is a long time, that we were saying, first, fix the leak, don't let them in, shut the border, then fix immigration law.
And there was a bill that passed the Senate to do that.
Not only did we fix the leak without a law, we had the leak going the opposite direction throughout the Great Recession. We had illegal immigrants leaving in droves.
Actually, buses.
In buses. And more in buses, more in airplanes. By the way, just as a side note, this is hilarious. More illegal immigration takes place in airplanes than by swimming across or walking across. By far. It's not even close. A lot more people come here with a valid visa on an airplane and then overstay the visa. A lot more people. Like as a factor of 10 to 1. So the wall, while it's a great image, the concept is silly because that's not how the illegal aliens are coming here. I mean, some of them are, and those are the ones that we look at. It's got the most good video because a video of people walking off an airplane looks like a video of people walking off an airplane. But a video of someone swimming across a river, everybody knows what that means.
Right.
So it's a matter of we've taken a popular issue and we've magnified it based on the way we felt in the middle of the recession when there were illegal immigrants as a hot point. Even though they were leaving in droves, the news was still talking about the 11 million number, and you'll still hear that number used. They're referring to 2006. So what we've got to do at this point, we've done the thing that we wanted to do. We have said, let's stop the flow, let's stop the new lawbreakers. It's still happening, but it's happening at a much, much, much lower rate. Now let's reform the immigration system to be realistic. If you are hiring someone to mow your lawn, it means that you want that person to mow your lawn. It seems like a pretty obvious statement, and you're willing to pay a certain amount of money. You don't want to pay three times that amount. There should be some way that we could say on a legal basis, we need a certain number of people to fill X jobs. Well, there are migratory workers that need to do tobacco harvesting. That's one that's taking a long time to get automation in there. Vegetables are coming up quick with automation. It may be that we won't need the kind of immigration that we've had in the past, but we still need it for businesses to grow.
And we still need it on construction jobs. By the way, the infrastructure plan that the president wants to pursue this year, which we need. We need to build a lot of highways. We need to build a lot of airports. The problem, and this is coming from the construction companies that would be bidding to get the contracts, is we can't find enough people who are willing to work in the hot sun and in the cold, laying concrete and painting lines and hammering nails.
Right, and that's not to say, this is the thing that a lot of the commentators say, are you calling Americans lazy? No, they have better paying jobs. I'm calling them smart. They would have to quit a better paying job to go be in the sun. No, we're not going to do that.
No, if you've seen the new DARPA robot, they'll be doing it real soon.
Yeah.
So the DARPA robot will be doing all that. They'll be out there doing all those things because they won't have anybody to work. And I agree with you. It is a new era of people. If I have a 14-year-old that does, it's amazing how people make a living now at 14 doing certain things. You can make a living. And I agree with you. We need to have legal immigration. No two ways about it. I don't want to have one set of citizens that can break the law and do things and other citizens that can't break the law and do things.
Pigs are more equal than others.
Let me say something. The immigration laws right now make as much sense as the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit did.
Oh, I'm not – yeah. Listen, they're politicians. They're politicians, and I expect nothing them to be but a politician. I don't expect them to be true motives of any sort. I am not under any illusion that – this is going to be some sort of magical wand and it's all going to be wonderful. It's just one of those things like the sky's blue, politicians are politicians, and they're going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Can we quote you on that? That's good. The sky is blue, politicians are politicians.
And they're going to do what they're going to do.
It is what it is.
That's almost a haiku. That's cool.
After enough years in listening to politics, I'm like, people get into politics because of power.
Yeah.
There's no two ways about it. People don't do those kind of things unless they truly seek power because most normal people go, ew, I got to take a shower.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that.
You've got great ideas. You should run for office. And then you hear gagging sounds. Nobody wants to do that.
Thanks, Chris.
That's gross.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Right, bye-bye. I think we've kind of beat that one in the ground. We know where it is.
I agree. It's now deep in the ground. We've beat it repeatedly.
One of the things that is – Alan Greenspan coined a word, conundrum. I like it. It's a good word.
He didn't coin the word, but he used the word circumstance.
He made it popular. And
by talking about the yield curve.
He
so
coined it, meaning
there.
He copied it, and he started talking. There's this conundrum of inflation and why we're not having more of it. And I read a really good paper on that. It's called The Amazon Effect. And what we have is because of a drop in the price of communication, and communication meaning both the ability to transfer information and the ability to transfer goods and services, Amazon is doing an amazing job of smoothing out the system so that small businesses, and you may not know this, but a lot of small businesses have been formed that sell their products not out of a storefront in town, although they may do that too. But they're selling their products on Amazon, and the competition is right in front of us. As a matter of fact, one of the big factors in retail businesses today is like an electronic store like Best Buy. People come in, they look at a product, they say, that looks pretty good. They scan the barcode with their cell phone, and they check the price on Amazon. And if the price on Amazon is less expensive, then they buy it from Amazon and walk out of the store. This has done an amazingly good job of holding prices down. And as long as prices are forced to stay low, and by the way, the imports are having a lot of effect on that too, but as long as prices are forced to stay low, then we can't afford to raise wages very much. Although the last 12 months, it's been fast. One fascinating thing has come up. People without a high school education, people with a high school education, but they don't have a college degree, even though they make about a third the average salary of wages of a person with a bachelor's degree, are actually seeing, for the first time since 2009, they're actually seeing their wages rise faster than the people with
college degrees as a percentage.
Yeah, because it just means they're catching up.
They're in short supply.
Right. They've been all hired up, and the new immigrants aren't there to fill the role.
But they're only rising at about a 2.3% annual rate right now, which indicates that we're not likely to get much inflation.
Right. So I'm going to talk about one of the things that you barely touched. It's become political. So you guys hearing this, throw politics out the window for a minute. Because we're talking about numbers, and while everyone has an agenda, our agenda is the economy. So let's talk about this very clearly. We have a balance of trade deficit with Mexico. That's come up quite a lot in local tweets, in recent tweets from the president about paying for the wall. The wall is going to cost $20 billion. Mexico should do it. It's peanuts compared to the balance of trade deficit we have with them. So let's go into that, not to refute the president, because we do have that balance of trade. $65.68 billion balance of trade deficit. That means that they import to us, we import from them $65 billion or $66 billion more than we export to them. Okay. How is that calculated? It's calculated, and it went into great detail on this, so we'll just do a real quick summary. It's calculated by customs. When a big import order comes in, the customs people go through and look at the manifest, and they give the retail price for those items. Not the wholesale price, the retail price. Mexico is the number 8 of all countries in the world for car exports. Mexico has no brands that are Mexican brand cars. So think about that for a second. This sounds almost like an SAT problem going through the logic here. Mexico is creating cars, but they're not Mexican cars. In fact, 3/4 of the cars built in Mexico are American cars. And if you look at, there's Mercedes-Benz and some BMWs that are made in Mexico, but the vast, and there's some Peugeot, or however you pronounce that, those Italian things. Peugeot is a Peugeot. French thing. Mind my French.
It's Peugeot.
Peugeot. I'm sure there's some other sounds in there. You got to throw French sounds in anytime you're talking about it. That's what I do. That's why I say French. Okay, so throw that in there, and what you realize is Mexico exported in 2016, same year, $31.4 billion worth of cars, 3/4 of which were American-owned from start to finish. Was that really an import if all the parts, all the metal, all the raw material, every piece of that was already owned by Americans? And we brought it home. That's kind of like saying Google's repatriation was an import. No, it's just repatriation. We're bringing it home. So if you just look at American companies that are building in Mexico with American parts, all owned by American shareholders, coming into the United States, we don't have a negative balance of trade anymore. Suddenly we have a very positive balance in trade. So what does Mexico get out of it? Well, they get employment for the people in the car plants and in the book plants and all the other American plants that are there. They're low income people that get a higher wage for working there. But they don't get anywhere near $20 billion when you look at it from that perspective. That's not what we're talking about. If the retail value of the cars exported from Mexico is $31 billion. That is the retail value. That is what you will be buying them for at the dealership. What the Mexicans are paid on this is a tiny, tiny fraction of that. So recognize that when we're dealing with import-export numbers, we're dealing with stuff that was put together before FDR came to office. Before World War II, we're talking about the 1920s era statistics that are still being used. This is the last piece to throw in here. How do you calculate the exports from the United States for Google? There's advertising that takes place on Google. Who makes the profit? Well, it's an American company. Are they exporting something? Well, they're really bringing money back to the United States, but they're not really importing anything or exporting anything. So we can't really show that. We've just got money. Money coming in for an intellectual property that we don't have any order or customs number that says this is what was exported.
There's a fundamental issue, and Jake and I completely agree on this. We've looked at it more and more. The import-export balance is both very artificial and, frankly, very wrong, because the fundamental basics to it were constructed by Herbert Hoover, and they're still in place. And we just don't have a handle on how it actually works. And the reason I can say that with complete confidence, I often say they may be wrong or something. No, they're just wrong. If you think about the fact that, let's say you had a 100-gallon tank of water, and there's water going into the tank and there's water coming out of the tank, and you very consistently measure that there's more water coming out of the tank than going into the tank.
Then the tank should get empty eventually.
And you discover that the tank, after 20 years of having more water going out than coming in,
it's got more water in it than it did then, by a lot.
The tank now has 300 gallons of water in it instead of 100 gallons. You got to assume that your gauge for measuring water coming in and going out is wrong.
Something's not right there.
If we had actually had this negative balance of trade that we keep reporting for the last 40 years as we've had it, the United States would be impoverished and have a lower standard of living than the countries that have the big imbalanced trade, which means that our standard of living would be lower than Mexico's or China's, and we'd be impoverished, and we couldn't afford to buy any more stuff.
All right, I'm going to throw in another number here from Mexico. Do you realize that we have a absolutely negative balance of trade with Mexico on bananas? We almost never export bananas to Mexico.
I would say that is probably a valid assumption.
But we import a lot of bananas from Mexico. In fact, in 2016, we imported about $157 million worth of Mexican bananas.
Mm-hmm.
We imported about $1 billion of Guatemalan bananas, and we didn't export. Well, I'm sure we exported on airplanes banana snacks to Guatemala, but they were probably not for resale.
Yeah.
So balance of
– I've never seen a banana snack on an airplane.
I've taken bananas on airplanes. I buy bananas in airports. Okay. So may have shown up in another country with a banana that was not recorded as an export.
Yeah, but if you do it to Canada, they'll get really angry.
They will get upset. Yeah, yes. Yeah. So that's the concept here. Balance of trade is very deceptive. If something's only made in a certain country, then that's where they're making it. You're going to have a negative balance of trade with that country for that product. And oil is another example of that, which is the next subject, but we've got commercials coming
up. We do need to do some comicals.
Yes. So if you would like to join us, I'm Jake. This guy over here is
Jeff.
We're both McClure's. We're the personal wealth coach. If you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number to call in here is 254-773-1400. We've got to play some commercials. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. Thanks for listening.
We back on the other side.
We back.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And telephone number in here remains 254-773-1400. And what were we talking about?
Well, we were talking about borders, import, export, but then I said we wanted to talk about oil.
Let's talk about Earl.
Earl. America this year is set to pass up Saudi Arabia and Russia.
I think we actually passed Saudi.
Yeah, this month. This month we passed them. And it's likely that we'll pass up Russia somewhere around May, because our production is ramping up at a very rapid rate, and Russia is one of 10 countries that joined with OPEC to cut back on their oil exports to try to get rid of that excess supply that our fracking has done. They've been a lot more successful than they wanted to be, than they expected to be, because it's causing our production to really ramp up. The reason why they've been a lot more successful is because of Venezuela. They can't afford to pay people to pump oil at the moment, which is kind of absurd because that's the number one source of their revenue. It's kind of like us shutting down the IRS for the government to talk about spending. Well, we're doing it, so absurdity happens everywhere. What we're looking at, though, is that American production, you know, we're at around $70 a barrel in oil. A big part of that has to do with the dollar has fallen and oil is traded in dollars. But if they're buying from Europe, they're converting euros to dollars and they can buy a lot more oil with the euro than they can with the dollar, which causes the price in dollars to go up. For them to keep the same price, our prices go up. So keep that in mind when we see this change. And it also means that it's going to be extremely profitable for us to dominate the world in oil for the foreseeable future. And we're going to see prices come up and then drop drastically and then come up and then drop drastically, although the bounces are going to be smaller and smaller until we consistently pull that price down. And I would expect to see prices in the $40 a barrel range into the future, just to give you an idea.
Well, the price of oil is from its bottom about a year and a half ago, around $30.
Higher.
Yeah. Actually, you got down near $30 a barrel. It's up over 60, but it's down a little bit in this last week. But the issue has been increasing demand at this point,
right,
combined with OPEC's slowdown in production. And another factor that's starting to affect the price of oil is one of the larger producers in the world historically has been Venezuela, but they have decided, the leadership, and if you want to call it leadership, the dictator in Venezuela has decided that spending money on other things is far more important than spending money on maintaining their oil equipment. And they've now twice fired all the people who knew what they were doing in their oil fields. They fired most of them the first time and the rest of them the second time. The military, the National Guard, the equivalent, is now running the oil fields.
And they don't really understand what they're doing, to put it lightly.
As a result, a lot of their production is collapsing.
You take a bunch of people who are decently trained, because the Venezuela military is decently trained, but they're trained to break things and kill people and put them in charge of running a business. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a transition.
And as Venezuela goes off the market, by the way, there's a great irony. We are supposedly very angry at Venezuela for its human rights and everything else treatment. Mm-hmm. But you know who the 80% of oil exported from Venezuela goes to the United States.
Yeah. And we buy it hand over fist, fist over hand. How can you have a hand over fist?
I don't know, but that's,
I think a fist is a hand.
Anyway, what we do, we buy it. It so happens that the only refineries in the world capable of large scale refining of the relatively heavy oil that comes out of Venezuela are in the United States,
mostly in Houston. Right in the Houston, Louisiana area.
So we keep buying their oil, and I'm sure there's some very good geopolitical reason why we don't just embargo them. Among other things, it'd put a lot of people out of work in the United States. But if you just said, okay, we're not accepting any more oil from Venezuela because we don't like what they're doing, their economy would instantly collapse. And that probably is one of those things that the United States does not want to take full responsibility for.
Right. And it would cause the price of oil here to go up as well. That's not popular. It would cause the collapse of their current government.
Also, well, I don't know.
It's already collapsing fairly well on its own weight.
Their government should have collapsed a long time ago, but
they arrest existing everybody. Companies and selling them and giving all the money to the people. They've run out of companies, though.
It's a pretty high probability, by the way, that sometime in the not too distant future, you'll see a headline, or if you follow these things, that Venezuela has officially, as opposed to de facto at this point, defaulted on its debt. It's playing Greece.
Yeah. It's very definitely defaulted.
And at that point,
about 4 months now of non-payment.
There will be a cascade of interesting events that go on as various companies move in court and start seizing
Venezuelan
oil tankers full of Venezuelan oil. And by the way, the only reason that Venezuela has not collapsed at this point is Russia came in with an emergency loan to them.
Yeah, $20 billion.
And so that's one of those little things that's floating around out there as a risk factor. But it's not really a risk factor in the sense that anybody who's participating in the market is already quite familiar with these issues.
Right.
And they're discounted. In other words, the companies that own the oil refineries down in Houston that are dependent upon Venezuelan oil have been sort of written off and saying at some point this is going to fold.
Yeah. If it doesn't fold, we'll be surprised. The hedge funds are already going to court in the world court to sue Venezuela because they scooped up a bunch of – they don't learn very well, these hedge funds. Hedge funds went in and scooped up a bunch of Puerto Rican debt and a bunch of Greek debt and a bunch of Venezuelan debt and then are surprised that the reason why they could buy it so cheaply is because they're not paying their debts. So they take them to court and they say, we want a bunch of stuff. They may get to seize some assets, but this looks like a net negative to anybody that was really investing even at the cheap side for Venezuelan bonds. That's our viewpoint on Venezuela. It's part of the reason why gas prices are higher, oil prices are higher, but don't expect it to stay higher longer. We have production is ramping up. Not only production, productivity and production is ramping up because new technology that's already been invented, it's just not been implemented because the price of oil dropped, is now being implemented. And every time we do this, it means that oil is profitable to get out of the ground at a lower level, at a lower price. Years ago, back, I guess we're talking about this in the early 2000s, we were talking about fracking being a potential, that shale oil was huge, and we had more known shale oil in the United States than the rest of the world combined. And it was this great big thing. We were talking about it. But the problem was that we would need $55 a barrel oil before it was profitable to get it out of the ground. Well, we passed that. We went up into the 100 mark. Fracking started. And as it started, the number 55 dropped because technology was invented to get it out of the ground cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, which means that we're looking at into the future profitability in the 20 number, 20 to 25, and then not too much further after that. I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see us see profitability at the $10 to $15 a barrel mark, which goes back to a inflation-adjusted normal number for oil. Throwing that all out there, there's another issue that is coming up. Electric cars and natural gas are replacing the demand for oil in lots of areas. So whether that's power production or transportation, we're finding other alternatives because oil has been too expensive for too long. The McCormick Reaper led to slavery going away. It wasn't the Civil War. Slavery went away because it was cheaper to do the job without hurting people's civil rights or lack of rights at the time. And the economy tends to make the changes that we can pat ourselves on the back ethically and say, this is why we did it. But it has to be dollar oriented to begin with, or it won't be sustained. So expect prices of oil to drop, but not in time to prevent oil from being defunct as a unit. At some point in the future, we're not going to use petroleum products to power our world. We'll have other things to do it, cheaper things to do it. And it won't be because of ecology, although there's some weight to that. It will be strongly because of price. So there's my futurist expectation.
Well, speaking of patting ourselves on the back, by the way, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and today is January 20th, 2018, and if it is, you're welcome to give us a call at 254-773-1400.
Sorry, that owl was me patting myself on the back. Well, my shoulder.
We warned as Bitcoin climbed up around $20,000 that it was due for a fall.
Massive fall.
It has fallen about 80% since then. Not 80%, I'm sorry, 50%. About 40% since then. It's down to about 12,000 today. It was down to near 10,000 a little earlier, a few days ago. And that probably, this is what we call a dead cat bounce. But we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Sorry to go back to subject about oil and so forth, but I was just curious, where do you see the excess or the new generating capacity coming from for electricity when all the electric cars come on the market, you know, full scale and so forth? Because, you know, they talked about, well, if you have the thing, you can charge it off peak overnight.
Yeah.
And
the Tesla Powerwall.
There won't be any off peak hours.
Well, actually, it would take an awful lot of cars to soak up the excess capacity that we have in the dark, because a lot of industry use of electricity during the daytime, a huge amount of industry use. And there's a huge amount of air conditioning in the summertime and electric use for heat in this part of the country in the wintertime. So we have the capacity to fill these peak demands, and these peak demands are like double and better of the regular demand in the evening. So we have in the United States, we have an immense reserve capacity if people want to charge their cars in the evenings.
Now, caller, you are absolutely right. We won't have peak periods the way we do now if it's averaged out. Now, Tesla has come out with a product called the Powerwall. This isn't an endorsement for them, but it's an idea that's happening. It's a lithium-ion battery that goes, it's designed to be inside a garage on the wall, not taking up a lot of space, that stores power throughout the night so that you can use it during the day, or stores power from your solar energy during the day so you can use it during the night. Now, solar is still not truly a viable option, but we've got some good technology that's bringing it forward. What's important to know is that peak time, when you don't ever have a peak time, that saves a huge amount of money, because when we're about at a 50% capacity, we're running at about one-tenth the cost as when we get up to 80% capacity. One-tenth the cost because, well, the more you get close to the upper end, the more expensive it gets, because it puts strain on the power production equipment to be running at that speed that long. Just think about if you're running an engine, any engine, and you're constantly flooring the accelerator, you're going to have a lot more repair issues that come up. So the idea of separating out the demand over a greater period of time brings down the prices by a lot more than just the difference between 50% and 80%. It's a factor of 10, one-tenth differential long-term that the average comes down. You throw in the fact that we're using more and more natural gas, which is a lot cheaper than coal. It's a lot cheaper than petroleum, other petroleum products, to run exactly the same power companies. And then the big one. There are about 12 major institutions working on fusion power right now. And the projections are we've gotten fusion power for less than a second that was putting out more power than was put into it to get it started, which is the first time in history that happened midway through last year. That's a big, big deal, because that means that we're on the road to radioactive-free nuclear energy. We're talking about clean and reusable energy that long-term may be readily available and easy to get to. So there's a lot of people pushing this because of the price of oil. When oil is up as high as it is for as long as it was, when coal was up as high as it was for as long as it was, we can talk about bringing back coal as a political move, but the technology has already left it behind. We can talk about oil as a dominating of the rest of the world, but it's kind of on its last legs. It's kind of, here's a little piece of irony, it's kind of like AM radio.
All right,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, right. Thanks for the call.
I don't know. One of the things is, by the way, that's coming up is, despite all the efforts the Trump administration has made, and I think they have made some overt efforts to stabilize coal mining employment, inadvertently or advertently, I don't know, this tax law that was just passed will almost undoubtedly have the result of lowering coal mine employment.
Yeah.
And it has not increased the production of coal in the United States, the activities that have been done so far. You can pull all the regulations you want off of coal and off of burning coal, And it's still more expensive right now to burn coal than it is to burn natural gas. And that's the fracking revolution is increasing that disparity. And it is a lot easier to transport natural gas than it is to transport coal. You add all this up, and it's the same argument, by the way, that said that when we invented VCRs in the United States, and it was a lot of howling and complaining 40 years ago when they disappeared, when all the VCRs were being manufactured in Asia. Well, now they're not being manufactured in Asia anymore. They're not being manufactured anywhere because we don't use VCRs anymore. That is basically, you can't, once economic change starts, it's very unpopular, and politicians, and that is a big piece of what's going on in the United States today. Politicians get elected on the promise to reverse the ill effect, the displacement effect of economic change. There's two big things to remember. Across the board, on average, our standard of living is going to go up with economic change.
And
politicians can't fix it. That's the two things.
It is really, really clear. A lot of times it's unpalatable when it happens, but it gets better. We're about out of time for this week. If you'd like to contact us off the air, there's a local phone number with voicemail available at
254-947-1111.
Also 1-800-914-7526, 800-914-PLAN. You can email us directly, and we do read these. Jeff@tpwc.com or Jake@tpwc.com. Go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com. And until next week, this has been thepersonalwealthcoach.com.
The latest news in Central Texas, on air at KTEM AM 1400 and online at ktemnews.com.